Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's about being accidentally slapped in the eye by your own pair of headphones. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. And my illustrious, very special guest right now is Dr. Richard Alan Miller. Welcome to the show.
Boy, I love your panache. I love it all. Your music is excellent, and I'm fussy. So
really?
Thank you for... I enjoyed your song. I really appreciated it a lot because I'm actually really into music. That's what I do. As a volunteer, I work at the Brit, and I got to meet people like Mark Knopfler. He liked my hat. And... I'm fussy about my music. And you were really very good.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, are you talking about the happy birthday song?
Happy birthday. Yes, I am. That's how I chose to contact you. You sent that to me. I watched it. I went, wow, that was really good. I actually really enjoyed it, so...
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see that happy birthday song as well, one thing I really want to see is, because it's way better than the actual normal happy birthday song, I thought it would be really awesome to be able to actually see a crowd singing that to somebody on their birthday, you know, while they're blowing out candles and stuff. That would be great. So if you search happy birthday Parky Hatchis, ladies and gentlemen, P-A-K-E-H-I, H-A-C-H-I-S, like a Pākehā and a mariachi, you'll be able to see that happy birthday song by Vinnie Eastwood and Mikhail Pierce there, you know. It'll be good. Anyway, speaking of which, let's get down to business, because I wanted to talk with you about holographics. You know much about holographics?
Well, I'm credited for writing the holographic concept of reality. I wrote that maybe 10 years before Carl Pribram or John Boehm did. And the reason I wasn't in Michael Talbot's book was all my work was classified. That's the way it works, man. You know, that's the way it is downtown. And I remember holonomic, give me a break. If you want a one-liner on it, it's a way of looking at the universe that offers solutions that a quantum universe will not. Quantum universe, for example, has Heisenberg. Okay, so here we are, that the more you know about one thing, the less you know about something else. How does that work for a physicist? we'd really like to know a little more about things, not less, because we know more about something else. That's crazy. So basically, a quantum universe deals with space and time as your primary measuring, you know, the length of time or space, whereas a holographic system deals with information. And as we're now discovering, parts of our anatomy, our body, our physics of biology, actually are outside space and time. That was one of the protocols I developed for Navy SEALs. When I was a SEAL, I wanted to learn how to be intuitive, how to think with our gut. And, you know, when you flip a coin, when you call it, you know, what is it? You know, basically, you're dealing with statistical inference and the rational brain, which basically is here. This thing here is to make sure that your beliefs are correct. I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it. It's not real. You're making it all up. I can, you know, prove that. And so a holographic universe then deals more in terms of information and resolution of information. In other words, you got physical and then emotional and intellectual and archetypal. In fact, there are 8 different ways information are organized in Leary's. I use Timothy Leary, but there's a lot in memes, the concept of how we structure or memorize or store certain kinds of information. And really, your gut, for example, will allow you to be outside space and time. You can make decisions that are like 99.9975% probable for 3 sigma. How do you do that without, you know? So the gut, which is your first brain, is actually in some ways connected with a universe that has nothing to do with space or time. It has to do with your purpose. And so if you're getting the idea, and what you're trying to do is tap into the higher senses of consciousness. And in order to do that, it's not about space or time. And so you construct a universe that would be more holographic in nature. And basically, a hologram is where you have n dimensions of information compacted into n minus one dimensions. It's an abbreviation system of the way information folds into or out of itself. And with that explanation, it would then draw that emotions, EQ, is more important than IQ. And so, you know, being aware, you know, that's what your music does. It brings out another level of experience in things. And it's all connected. But the hologram is the way it closes in or implodes out on itself with information. There you go.
Well, I was watching a movie called Robot and Frank. And Frank was a retired thief, and he lives on his own. He's kind of old now. And his son buys him a robot. There's like a little robot butler to do all his work and everything. And what he does is he trains the robot how to steal things so that he can go back out and start stealing again. And what was very interesting is towards the end of the film, he realized that the robot's memory banks would be able to be tapped into by the authorities, and they'd be able to have evidence that he committed all these crimes. And so he said, well, why don't we try and delete those specific memories? And he says, I can't do that. All my memories are stored on a hologram, so you can't actually ever delete them. You can only delete the quality of the recording a little.
The quality. Now, that's an interesting metaphor. There you go. Quality. Yeah.
I like what do you make of that?
Well, that's there is a really neat science fiction movie out called Delete. You know, and it's about a computer that deletes mankind, control alt delete, system reboot. I like these concepts. That's why it's called science fiction. You know, where you take a concept of science and you make a space opera or something out of it, or you show in metaphor, you know, the principle of living on a neutron star, for example. What would life be like as a crystal that could only grow in one direction because of gravity? That's Robert Forward. There's a lot of really good science fiction writers like that. Who wrote that, by the way? What was that called again?
I don't know. I never heard of it.
No, your science fiction that you were talking about. The idea of the guy with this little robot.
I'm not sure who wrote it. It was a movie.
Yeah, cool. I haven't seen it. I like science fiction movies. I usually pop it in here on my arm and beat it in.
Well, see, the way I was looking at holographics, or at least my understanding of it, maybe you can enlighten me somewhat if I'm wrong, but it's about a repetition of repeating patterns, you know, like a fractal.
Yeah. The math that's used is fractal math, which is a generator, okay? And there are several kinds. There's Mandelbrot, Julian May, but they're like, when you have something that's this size, the next generator is this size. It's not this size. It's not that size. It's, you know, there's a relationship of one size to the next, like your Fibonacci thing. It'll scroll out and repeat itself going into or out of itself. And basically, that has to do with the structure of a specific molecule, like dimethyltryptamine, that there's eight of them, neurotransmitters, that would predict how information would fold into or out of itself mathematically. And what you're talking about are fractals. And so the resolution has to do with where you start your start point. You start your point here, the next resolution is going to be here. It's not going to be up here. It's not going to be down here. It's going to be right here. And if you're here, then it'll be here. In other words, there's a relationship of one thing to another.
Kind of like how prime numbers work, sort of thing.
Yeah, Yeah, there's a relationship. It's numeronomy is what that field of physics is called. Has to do with the nature of different and predicated on the base system that you're working with. You know, prime numbers and things like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you said that you literally kind of wrote the book on holographics, but you couldn't tell anybody what it is because it was classified, is it still classified? Can you not talk about it?
No, I'm all that. That's all I know. I wish that. Yeah, that'd be cool. No. When I came out of undergraduate school, I went to work for Old Man DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware, and they had me at the experimental research station. You know, there I was. And I'm walking down the hall, going to my lab, and I looked in this one laboratory, the door was open, and there was a three-dimensional color TV, and that's where I met Gaber. I met the man that invented or constructed the word hologram. And he had a three-dimensional color TV. Saw it. Where is that TV now? I mean, I saw it in 1967, so that means that they have, in many ways now, started to repress certain kinds of technology. But I saw that, and when I did, I was struck with the idea that man was basically a hologram of a three-dimensional structure called the DNA. That paper was called Embryonic Holography. And basically, I suggested that the DNA was a three-dimensional hologram of who man was, who man is, and who man will be. In other words, it contained a time element in terms of the unfoldment of going from one dimensional set to another. So I then suggested, oh, well, maybe all we are is a waveform in space. And everybody thought that was real weird. But it allowed us to do the initial grasping of how mind control might work using microwave. Now, this is back in the 70s, and I sent you that paper. I don't know if it came across to you yet or not. I sent you synthetic telepathy. Enjoy that. That was stuff I did back 40 years ago. And today, I'm writing about the new dimensions of it. And they have really gone over the edge, I have to tell you, Vinny. They're weaponizing our foods. They're turning them into weapons. I don't know. You're in Australia?
No, New Zealand. Why is it that Americans always think New Zealanders are from Australia? It's unbelievably frustrating.
I didn't know which country you were from. I didn't know.
I know. It's an American geography thing, you know.
Well, your singing certainly didn't tell me which country you were from. It was excellent, by the way. You're actually...
In fact, an article came out in New Zealand, I think in 2003, showing that all New Zealand's most popular musicians and bands all sing with American accents.
Oh, well, what about Yathu Yindi? Hey, listen, man, I've been there. There's a bunch of Aborigines up on stage doing rock and roll. I love it, man. Australia and New Zealand, they're quite different. You're closer to Antarctica and probably have more of that structured water coming out of the Antarctic Ocean. You don't know about that, do you?
No, not really.
They're mining deuterium in and around New Zealand. There's a big deposit of it.
In fact, there was some... Funny you should mention that. I just received a document last night of the minister for, I think he was the earthquake recovery minister and as well as a minister for natural resources or something like that, Jerry Brownlee.
Minister of money.
Minister of extracting natural resources and giving it to foreign banks and private military contractors. But he said that there's something like... $4 trillion plus worth of those rare elements locked in New Zealand soil, these things that are used for fiber optic cables, things that are used for specialized military weapons and advanced technologies that we've got really rich mineral deposits that they want to start extracting. And there was this this coal mine that we had called Pike River Mine. Now, at the time, Pike River Mine's symbol, by the way, is a pyramid, of course.
Of course it is.
And all the miners that went down into the mine all got blown up and died. And the first cop on the scene was surprised that he wasn't the first one on the scene. He was surprised to find the military was already there, a demolition crew. And what was interesting at the time is just before this Pike River Mine explosion, the government had been telling the people why it's so important that instead of doing underground mining, that we do big open cast mining in all of our national parks where all of these things are, because it's cheaper and more efficient. You know, and this is how it works, isn't it?
It's all about greed. And I would be remiss if I didn't say something about Fukushima. And you're right there in the middle of it. And I am preparing a brief, a white paper for Carrie Cassidy, and I'll share it with you when I get it finished, even before I do her show. It's Fukushima in the military. I'm still military, as you may know. I'm not like high up anymore, but I'm old and grumpy. But they gave me a position, you know, to manage a bunker for the military. And we use a type of algorithm. It's a form of Clifford algebra that monitors the chatter on the internet and will then accurately predict the future based on the buzz that's going on with keywords and things. This is above.
Is that similar to Cliff High's web bot program?
Similar. We're using Ben Gerstle's material. We're using a slightly different form of algorithm. They're all very similar. You know, they're algebraic. Okay. Well, they're algorithms that, and it would suggest that this is similar.
Well, hold on. We'll actually continue this after the break. Dr. Richard Allen Miller is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. Back in just a few minutes, folks. Don't you go anywhere.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about getting irradiated. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the only first world nation to be completely surrounded by a radiated ocean. You've got to love that shit, right, Muslim? No, it's not the only one. We're all surrounded by it now, baby! You know, I'm just wondering, how do you deal with the reality of Fukushima? You know, I was just... There are some people out there who deny that it's even a problem. Who like, I'll show them the screenshots of NOAA and other organizations and so on and so forth. Satellite imagery of the radiation plumes that are all around the entire Pacific Ocean. And they go, no, that's not real. That's not real. You probably made it up on a computer or something like that. It's like, dude, are you freaking insane? Are you totally crazy?
The standard stock response is, don't worry, we'll make more. There's too many people in the world anyway, right? Mr. Bill! Oh. You know, really. It's plausible deniability. Good luck with that.
Doesn't sound very plausible.
Fukushima is now in a serious situation. It wasn't as bad as it has become. It is becoming worse. The kinds of management and disclosure that's coming out of there is inadequate. It's not working right. Basically, over the last 50 years, your primary organized crime units, mafias in different countries, took over garbage disposal and waste control. You know, they run all the garbage trucks in the United States anyway.
For the easy disposal of bodies, right?
Well, it's going to be more about disposal of garbage. Like Bendix would bury batteries in a community that then leukemia started showing up. And there'd be class action suits about the fact that they weren't taking care of the garbage. Now, what's happening right now is that France sells their nuclear waste to Germany, and Germany disposes of it in South Africa. And it's the deaths that are coming in there. You can watch the kinds of thyroid and other kinds of cancers that are developing in Africa, and it becomes very clear that some of the primary people that we respect, like Kofi Annan and some of the other Kofi Annan, are under the tank of disposal of waste materials like TV screens and things like that. These minerals came out of Africa in the first place, you know, to make the crystals and the cell phones. In the United States right now, there's 1.57 cell phones per person. Now, that's a lot of chips that are actually basic. Yeah, and they're basically toxic. And when they wear out and they dispose, because that's what they make these little tiny devices on, so that you can throw them away and they'll be like Dorito corn chips. They'll make more of them. You know, it's crazy. Oh, and this one does, it scratches my back. You know, it's got apps that scratch my back or whatever. It's crazy. The grid itself, there right now we are in a lockdown in FEMA Region 3 in the United States. That's happening right now, where they're doing an experimental off the grid, where Safeway stores and Walmart are on their own grids. So, you know, emergency response thing that FEMA's been setting up. That's where all those weapons and body bags and everything else that you've been reading in the media went for, you know, to do this drill.
Apparently those are the only things that would survive a nuclear holocaust, is cockroaches and Walmart.
No, even they don't make it. Actually, if it's plutonium and you're a bacterium 2 miles down in a lava tube, you're not going to survive. That's how invasive that is. So, you know, it's not, you know, they're basically suggesting the infobots, the types like Cliff High and some of these other things that we in the military use, they're all suggesting that we're getting right down to the edge of being probably the worst event in human history, other than possibly Atlantis. And you're about to watch an Atlantis or Greece in rich culture. The Shogun is going to disappear forever. And it will be gone from history, just like Atlantis will be. Japan itself is sitting on a precipice. There's nothing below it. You know, an 8.4 and it's gone. It's history. And what about reactor 4 with all those plutonium rods up about 40 feet high? How does that work? Running by the Yakuza? That's crazy. The whole thing is nuts. And while I don't have ultimate solutions, I am being asked to talk more about Ascension and how to change the movie. You know, using the non-local mind. That's the book I'm now writing. I have other books out right now. The Power Tools were probably, well, the talks I'm doing in Mexico and other places like that, these big consciousness conferences I'm doing now, basically they're around how to defend yourself against weaponization of epigenetics. You know, wheat is a weapon now. It's not even about GMOs. What they're doing is they're altering a gene in wheat to activate a bacteria in your gut that you got from a cat when it purred in your face. It's T. gondii, it's inert, and the gene in wheat activates it. And Science Digest likes to refer to that bacteria as little mind benders. They turn into a Walmart shopper. What they're after now, well, it's, oh yeah, you got the idea anyway. Everybody over here is obese. Everybody's sick. I have started to eat from my garden. I started a garden last year. This year I learned how to can. Next year I will learn how to eat out of my cupboards. What I'm trying to say is it's time for everybody to get off the couch and start practicing one step at a time towards sovereignty. And the grid is going to collapse. We're right now in the middle of some major X1 band coronal mass discharges from the sun. You can go to Suspicious Observer. There they are. Boom, boom. And that's what caused Fukushima in the first place. And if Fukushima has a second, I don't know, tsunami from a plate shift in the, out in the ocean, like they almost did again a couple days ago, I don't even want to think about what's going to happen to Earth. Because if any of those plutonium rods hit each other, we have a nuclear explosion. And that's different. That's what happened in Reactor 3. They said it was hydrogen, and now they're proving that it was actually a nuclear explosion that blew off Reactor 3. And what they're doing now is removing as much as 5 feet of topsoil from the area because it's all laden with plutonium. Yeah! Welcome to the new world. And
what the hell are you going to do without 5 feet of topsoil to grow your gosh dang crops in, man?
Where are you going to do it? Well, there's the sun. You can shoot it into the sun. You can do the original way of doing it where you melt it in with glass and you bury it. And usually that's the cheapest way they do it. They marry it to glass and they bury it. And then it's down there for a billion years. The thing is, it took the Earth more than a million years to bring those radioactive unstable isotopes back into true. And so what we're doing now with our uranium and now plutonium is making huge stockpiles of a toxin that it took the Earth millions of years to break down and make stable. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. That technology is wrong. I think the first thing that should happen is that the switch be turned off, and then all the budgets on nuclear energy be oriented toward remediation and changing and cleanup. Africa is probably the first place you're going to need to start on that. That's what they've been doing in Africa.
Mm. Can I ask, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about the Pacific? Because there's another problem in the Pacific, and I just want to kind of mention it first before we go into this. There's a massive plastic soup in the Pacific.
Several times
the size of the state of Texas, just floating garbage continent virtually. And a couple of people have actually come up with this really ingenious idea of this boat, kind of like a fishing trawler. Sucks it all up and cleans the ocean as it does it without killing any of the fish or anything. Now, I was just wondering, are there any suppressed technologies that clean up radiation that's in water?
Well, they're talking about it. There's all these different, you know, the Hutchinson effect, John Hutchinson. Have you seen? Yeah.
I've seen a lot of this. In fact, I met a man a year ago who actually met John Hutchinson in the desert, and he showed him his devices and everything, and he thought it was really amazing. Like he had one of those big long horseshoe files.
John. Yeah, he lives here in Oregon. He's been here to my home for dinner. Using radar to create harmonics in a microwave band that would destabilize isotopes is kind of a little far-fetched. Even Bearden might have some problems with the scalar waves. Now, with that said, there are technologies I don't know anything about, zero-point energy crap. I haven't seen anything that's viable. Okay, as a physicist, I'm like, I don't see anything new over the horizon. I'm wondering why. You know, that's a real, I mean, if I were, you know, back in the day, I'd be on that like stink on shit. I mean, that's the move of the century right now. This has got to be, right now, and the removal of those rods on Reactor 4 is as scary as the Cuban Missile Crisis was. That's how dangerous it's going to be.
The difference being, of course, that the Cuban Missile Crisis, everybody knew about it at the time and was really freaking out and wanted to do something about it. Fukushima, virtually blackout.
Oh, there's 1,500 rods that they have to remove, and it's like playing pickup sticks. You throw them up in the air and they all fall down in a clack, and then you have to pick one stick up at a time without anything else moving. And they got 1,500 of them to do that. And if any of them touch each other, New Zealand's gone first.
And how's New Zealand gone first? If it happens in Japan, wouldn't Japan?
It's going to take you out before it took out, you know, just like On the Beach, that movie with David Niven driving over the edge. Listen, the whole thing is risky. And what they're having to do it, and they have concerns. And now the rods are 40 feet up in the air in these towers that are not tsunami-proof. And then they postponed the testing. They stopped the removal with those tornadoes that went through. You know, they decided maybe they shouldn't do it during that period. Now they're going to resume it this week. Good luck.
Mm.
That's how you are. And that's what I meant about there's no oversight. Nobody's monitoring these people that are doing TEPCO is absolutely lying. So, you know, where are we? You know, besides greed and doom. Now, there is other possibilities. How far out do you want to go?
As far out as it goes.
Well, here we go
as
then.
As usual.
Supposing that I'm not real, I'm just a wise old man somehow having dialogue with your consciousness, that you're hallucinating that badly. Okay? That your daughter isn't really your daughter, it's a younger woman having dialogue with your consciousness. That's Jungian psychotherapy. And at the moment of your death, it won't matter because that's when time stops. There's a movie that you can have your listeners check out called Astral City. It's in Portuguese, so you have to do an English subtitle, you know, captions, whatever you want to do. And it's about a guy, doctor, watching himself die on the operating table. And then when he dies, what happens next? And basically, the physical plane in the movie is where you go to be sick spiritually. That your experience of reality, you know, time and holograms and all the rest of that, how it all works, right, is your illness of fever. You're that sick. And that when you wake up, you go back to the future, and they got these cool beds, and they float, and everybody heals with their hands, and, you know, it's a kind of a cool thing. And then all of a sudden someone wants to go back to make sure that Uncle Ralph knows that they're okay. And everybody's sad because that person's going to be ill again. You forfeit your memory, you know, that kind of thing. So, really, death is the way out in terms of what we would normally associate with a word called ascension. And I'm going to suggest that it's possible for you to do that without having to die. Where God so favored you, you know, you didn't have to go through the death to, you know, move on to the next place, having consciousness. That is what we call the evolution of consciousness. And time is a duration of a consciousness, which means it's not really real. It's how you store memories. And so if you have a way of beginning to work on yourself, what you're doing essentially is catching up with past lives, of picking up from where you left off on your purpose. And I have had the rare opportunity when I was at the Nexus conference in Australia last year, I met this man that had a near-death experience. He died, came back, left with a bunch of impressions of what's going to happen. And, you know, the light, like Kubler-Ross.
Well, Richard, we're coming to break now. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Richard Allen Miller is my guest. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the most operatic 2 hours in talk radio. It's automatic, it's operatic, it's systematic, it's It's Grease Lightning. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And our very special guest is Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Now, you were talking just before the break about somebody who had a near-death experience. Could you recap that, please?
Well, the guy died and came back to life. And when he came back, he was left with some impressions that, you know, follow a lot of the tracks of, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, relatives there to greet you, blah, blah, blah. And he said some interesting things. One thing he said was, everyone you meet, you're going to have to live their life as part of the whole big picture before you get out of here. Now, that suggests that none of this is real, and that you're having to, everyone that you meet, me, you, whatever, have to experience our lives as one thing to do. That each of us has something important to do that has to happen before we, all of us, get out of here. And that means that if you don't get off the couch and you don't do it today, that's okay. You just keep coming back until you do get off the couch. And that's one of the reasons why the bloodlines of Christ were so interesting. They kept epigenetics and the relationship of genealogy and bloodlines to remember your past and your purpose and why you were here in the first place. And then once you regathered some of your memory of who you were in the past, you pick up from where you left off. This is metaphor. You pick up where you left off and finish your project before you get to move on. And he said that everyone that you meet, then you should pretend like they're you, and you treat them like you would treat if it was yourself that you're meeting. And I found his concepts valid in helping me assimilate my own understanding of what changing the movie might really imply, literally. Now, I'm trying to do it as a physicist, and so it's got to have a physical analog to it, you know what I mean? Not transhumanism where I place my consciousness into a computer, you know, but somehow there is a relationship of continuity to what I'm doing. And I have recently discovered that for myself. I'm old and smell bad, so I'm rotting and getting old, and now I'm getting it sort of kind of. And what I'll try to do is leave a few footprints on terms of how you might want to do it through your voice and your little pipes that you talk about, little pipes of pan.
You've kind of faded out there a little bit, can't hear you.
Well, I did. I don't hear you coughing.
Because I was murdered.
Oh, you were murdered. Yeah. I love your accent, by the way. It's just very charming. No idea.
You're welcome. All right. Now, elements. Death. I was just thinking about this. Do people fear death? Yes, they do, in a large extent. You know, somebody's got a gun on you, and he's trying to rob you, and if you don't give up your money and all that kind of stuff, most people will have the Shiite Muslim scared out of them, right?
Now, I was just thinking about this. Survival circuit, that's one of the neurologic circuits.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking that must exist for a very reason, because a lot of people who say that, you know, and you yourself have said that this isn't real. This is a hologram and that kind of thing. What I've figured out is, like, I play a bit of video games here and there. If you pretend that the video game is real, you play much better at it because you're playing for keeps.
There you go. In other words, you go into a timeless place called the flow. And that's what Crowley called doing your true will. You know, basically where you're not in conflict with anything. And then, you know, reality wants you to do that. And most of us do it emotionally, kicking and screaming. And we create what's called karma, like a pinball going back and forth against the wall, you know, ricocheting back as you're going down the track. And the idea is to take, like a sports car, we find the flow of the move so that you're not in conflict with anything. In fact, that would be the definition of a saint, is someone that's not in conflict with anything. Mm. And so, well, that's one of the measures I did. Is Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh a saint? I don't think so. He's got machine guns and his neighbors are trying to, you know, that doesn't sound like a very saintly thing going on there, even though he's religious. Well, you know, the idea of doing your true will, the way Crowley would put it, is none will say nay. It's what you're supposed to be doing. And so James Hillman wrote about that. It's in a book called The Soul's Code, In Search of Character and Calling. And basically, you have two elements. You know, you got your purpose here, your calling. You have your character, little nooks and crannies that life has laid on you for why you're, you know, dysfunctional in this way and not that way, that kind of thing. Right. And so character, that's, you know, how you choose to go down there kicking and screaming or stoically or whatever you do. And what I'm trying to do now is discover the path of least resistance, the way of tapping in to your purpose. That'll be one of the chapters in the non-local mind. Besides ascension, another one will be purpose. You know, man doesn't really have free will. Basically, to have free will, you'd have to have total disclosure. You don't. What you have is true will. You know what you know up to a certain level, and that's all you have to work with in terms of trying to complete your purpose.
See, I just assumed that I'm probably wrong. In so doing, I'm always right, because I'm wrong on occasion, which means that I'm correct. And if I'm not wrong, then I'm right.
I play those logic games, yeah. I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't have believed it. You know, yeah. Number 8 flat iron skillet works pretty good.
Altered. Now, we were talking about, you talked about a saint as somebody who's never in conflict with anybody. I was just thinking about the only two types of people in the world. Those people who want to be left alone and the people who just won't leave you alone.
Oh, yeah? Well, my dad said it differently. He said there's three ways of being in this world. There's the vulgar, the adept, and the exempt. And the vulgar get audited. The adept gets money back from the government, and the exempt has a 501c3. They don't pay taxes. In other words, you get a free get-out-of-jail card when you're exempt. That's why the Masons place it so high. It's Adeptus Exemptus, grade 7 in the temple. You know, master of the temple, that means you create your own universe. Magic.
Of course. I've always thought about that philosophy, and it's like, if I can create my own universe, does that mean 7 billion other people who also can create their own universe avoided whenever I create mine? That doesn't sound logical to me.
No,
that sounds crazy.
But consensus is the largest mob out there.
Yeah.
That's how that works. You know, the power of the group is greater than the sum of individual parts. That's why you go out into the universe as a solitary before you start working with tribes. Find your own center before you start working on other people. You know, God, I think it's, how does it go? We are no longer at war in the physical world, that if we want to change this world, we change ourselves, and the world changes with us. That's the way it's going to work, one step at a time.
Yeah, well, I think it's about morality, and it was funny. I was watching a presentation by Mark Passio from WhatOnEarthIsHappening.com. I'll be having him on in December, and he was talking about morality is actually the search for truth, because if your morals dictate that you are to tell the truth, then morality itself is in fact truth, and lies are inherently amoral. Right. And I was just thinking.
You could talk about internal landscape, the secondary level of that. And the internal landscape of being honest, for example, is that I'm afraid of being busted or I want to do the right thing. And, you know, they're different and yet they're the same. And what happens is the one that's afraid creates an internal landscape that becomes true. That is how you structure water, how psyche is brought into matter, is done usually through the structuring of water in your belief systems. You know, that's how the brain works. It's not a thinking thing. It's to make what you believe true.
Well, of course, if somebody was to shoot me from 300 yards with a high-powered rifle and I believed that the bullet wouldn't blow my head off, it'd still blow my head off regardless of my belief. Because what I found is the danger is mixing up the importance of the physical reality and the spiritual reality. You know, like I feel that the physical and the metaphysical are just as important, and without acknowledging the existence and the importance of both, it's kind of like an unbalanced hemisphere in the brain. Sort of like, so you know how some people are like too right brained and some people are too left brained. You know, they don't believe anything even if they see it. And the other side of the brain only believes things if they see it, and they're both wrong because you need your whole brain freaking working.
Well, you've got the yin and the yang. You've got the balance of ration and reason, and voice of coyote and voice of reason. You know, you have, and it turns out it's the same voice too. By the way, stepping outside the box. That's why, you know, when you're not sure what you're doing, you're always got some doubt. You have this, you know, nervousness.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Dr. Richard Alan Miller, thank you very much for coming on the show today. It's been an honor and a pleasure and various other nice adjectives too.
Sure. I'll give you a website if people are interested in knowing more about where to get my books.
Go for your life, son.
You bet.
All right. RichardAlanMiller.com was one I saw on the...
I have this one here. It's OAK-publishing.
Oak-publishing.com.
Yeah.
Oak-publishing.com, ladies and gentlemen, and we will see you again sometime. Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, but...